Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
Dan, always a pleasure to have you on. How you doing, my friend?
Don, it's an honor and delight to be here again. I must be one of your most frequent.
I think you are. No,
guests.
I think you're number one. Yeah. I mean,
I'm rarely number one, so that's nice.
Our friend Erica Sutter and I have done more podcasts together, but mostly hers. But as far as Inside College Soccer, yeah, you're. In fact, Erica and I record one on hers coming up here later on today, but I'm glad to have you on. Dan's got a new book out, Compete, Developing a Mental Playbook for Performance Under Pressure in Sport. And I love any book that comes out and wants to talk about competition and competing. I'm a big believer that competition is so crucial for a player, not only development, but enjoyment. If you're in sports, you like to compete. I don't know an athlete that doesn't like the idea of competing. Even young kids will keep score. People talk about it's an American thing. Maybe it's an American thing. I do see some of it in Europe too. It's people are talking about, oh, don't worry about keeping score. It's like kids keep score. Kids know if they put the ball in 10 times and the other team hasn't even taken a shot yet. Kids know, and they enjoy it. It's okay to be a competitor.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's a really interesting time at the moment in the world of sports psychology, Don, because I think there's so much great stuff that's emerged over the last decade as mental health and well-being has been normalized with this generation. There's so much great stuff around mental health and well-being, and it's brilliant. It's been normalized, and my colleagues are awesome at delivering on this in college programs, NFL, NBA. There's lots of great stuff in the MLS and NWSL around mental health and well-being. I actually think the interesting dynamic, Don, is that we're now starting to become, there's a poverty of information flowing through around mental skills, mental techniques related to performance, high performance under pressure, around how to be the best competitor you can be. And as you've quite rightly mentioned there, to love every single second of competing, you know, doesn't mean you're going to win all the time. It doesn't mean you're going to high perform all the time, but it's a joy to learn skills and techniques that can help you be a better competitor. By that, I mean being tough to beat, having better possible performances, being able to turn a 6 out of 10 into a 7 out of 10 performance, a 5 out of 10 into a 6 out of 10, you know, best possible performances. And there's a whole host of skills and techniques that can go into that. So I love how you've opened this, because I just think that we've become very, very strong now in the world of sports psychology around mental health and well-being. And this is why I wrote this book, Compete, because I also think it's critical to accompany the mental health and well-being piece, performance psychology. How do I become the best competitor I can be? How do I get better at executing technical, tactical, physical actions to the very best of my ability under pressure more consistently? You know, I think that's so critical. So that's why I've written this book.
Yeah, no, you and I have talked a lot about the high performance mindset and what that means, but putting it in the terms of competition and competing and being a competitor, I think makes it more accessible, maybe, the terminology. I know we're talking about some of the same things, but what, for those that have read Soccer Tough and Soccer Tough 2, and coaches that have read Soccer Brain, what have you expounded on in your new book about competition, maybe, that you hadn't What got your brain thinking? You know what, I haven't really covered that. I need to talk about that, or I need to reframe. So what have you talked of? What new concepts or reframing have you done in your new book, Compete?
I think as much as anything, it's that, I mean, there's lots of new things, and we'll explore this over this podcast episode. There's lots of new things, but I've tried to package this in as neat a manner as I possibly can. You've mentioned high performance mindset, so to me, I'm borrowing from my introduction here. I open this book by saying, for me, the best competitors and what competition is about control. The ability to take control and take charge of self as an individual and as a teammate. I think that's absolutely critical. Control is quite a controversial word in my world. You know, there's lots of in psychologists who are, brains for Britain. They're far more intelligent than I am, who will talk about free will, and we have free will, we don't have free will, we can control this, we can't control that. Look, I use the term taking control. Coaches, all the coaches listening in, and I know there's plenty, will talk about wanting to control the game. We compete by controlling the game, by using the game plan. I strip that back further in the introduction. I talk about, yes, coaches want their players, their team to control the game. That means they need their players to be able to take control of themselves first and foremost, as individuals and as
Right.
teammates. Well, how do we do that? Well, we need frameworks. We need simple mental frameworks. Each individual player needs a simple mental framework that enables them to take control of their mindset, find their best possible mindset when they compete, to be able to win more moments during a game. A game of soccer consists of thousands of moments that can be won and lost. And then I think the team who has players who find their best mindset, their high performance mindset, as you've mentioned, to win more moments, then becomes better at managing momentum. This is how I open this book. So, sport, not just soccer, because it's a book more than soccer, but team invasion sports. Sports are about mindset, moments, and momentum. If we got players who can find their high performance mindset, start there and stay there no matter what, they give themselves a better chance to win more moments. They give themselves a better chance to win more moments. They become better at managing momentum as a team. Mindset, moments, momentum. And players and teams that can do that get better at high performing consistently under pressure. And ultimately, that's how I define a great competitor, is somebody who can high perform consistently under pressure, or more consistently under pressure. That's how I open this book. And then I say in the introduction, well, we can, that great, okay. How do I do that? We need that framework. We need that framework. What does mindset consist of? How do we break that down? We need a framework that helps us to find that high performance mindset, that helps us win more moments, that helps us to manage momentum. We need that framework. And this is what this book is about helping players create a mental framework, and have a mental playbook for this mental framework in order to high perform consistently under pressure. So that's how I opened the book, and then I start to talk about all the different sort of skills and techniques involved in that, which we can speak about now.
Yeah, well, as a coach, I love this mo this idea that you talk about momentum, because I don't think that there's a player or a coach out there who hasn't experienced this. We go up one, we go up 1-0 in the first 10 minutes of the game. We feel like we're in control of the game. They can hardly cross midfield. We've pressed them in, and then they come across and they get a shot off, and then they get a corner, and then they get another shot, and we all of a sudden can't clear. And then, 30 minutes in, they've knotted it up, and then it's we're down 2-1, and then it's 3-1. It's like, how did we lose control of this game? Or the other way, right? We've done it two teams, and you see teams that are just dominating play, playing in a certain way, playing positively, going forward, no fear, dominating a team and it's clear it's going to be 5 or 6 nothing in our favor. If we can just keep this momentum and keep this mindset, but then something shifts and then the other team gets momentum, and you'll see it in games, no matter whether it's American football or baseball or basketball or soccer, golfers even. You'll see a golfer dominating one day and then falling apart another day. It's like if we can play positively on the front foot, so to speak, right? Not sitting back and playing prevent defense, all of a sudden our mentality shifts and that affects how we play, and then that affects momentum. I think every coach would rather win, 5-0 rather than squeak out a 1-0 nerve-wracking 10 more gray hairs today type win. So that idea of momentum, talk a little bit more about that and how does that shift? How does it sh Is it an individual shift, or is it five individuals and all of a sudden 11 individuals and 20 individuals are all thinking the same way? It's like how it's such an odd thing how mental framework can be contagious both directions, from one individual or from a coach to a group to a team. And all of a sudden, my team's Arsenal, right? And I watched them play, Man City the other day in the Carabao
Carabao
Cup
Cup, yeah.
final. And it's like they didn't look like they even wanted to be the quick 1-2 touch Arteta type team that can tear teams apart. It looked like they were scared. I'm sure that maybe that is it. Maybe that's, I don't know. But they looked fearful. The entire match, they looked scared, like they didn't want to lose. How does that work?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't
I know it's
it?
complicated, but yeah.
No. But I think I'd like to think in this book I've broken it down in a manner that simplifies this, and to describe this is perhaps slightly tougher than to read it and to look at it on a bit of on a page. But it's interesting what you're talking about. And let's take the Arsenal situation. Now, obviously, I'm making a slight assumption. I was like you, a viewer. And I don't work for Arsenal, so please excuse me. I don't love making assumptions, but let's go on the basis that you felt as a fan that Arsenal were fearful. That was potentially the case. And please, everybody listening in, I've been blessed to work at six Premier League clubs, and I know you've coached at the highest level, Don. The reality is, even the best players in the world can be susceptible to a mindset shift. Look. Let's think about this from a scale of 1 to 10, because this is what I invite the reader to do. In chapter one, I introduce the reader to my elite competitor model. This is what I did with, you've talked about Arsenal, and we think about Mikel Arteta. If I sat down in front of Mikel Arteta tomorrow, I would introduce the same thing to him as I'm about to say here, and I built this with great coaches. I built this with Eddie Howe. I built this, who's now at Newcastle. I built this with Arne Slot at Feyenoord before he went off to Liverpool. I would introduce the listener to imagine a scale of 1 to 10. Let's call that a mindset scale. And at the top right-hand corner of that mindset scale, from between 7 and 7 up to 10 out of 10, let's call it high performance mindset or HPM. You've alluded to that already, Don. Underneath that, 5 and 6 out of 10, let's call that HPM or high perform, excuse me, a APM, average performance mindset. And underneath that, between 1 and 4 out of 10, let's call that LPM or low performance mindset. HPM, APM, LPM, high performance mindset, average performance, low performance mindset. What you are suggesting to me, and I don't disagree with you, I watched the game. As you saw the game unfold, technically, tactically, physically, and you've put this in soccer speak, you've talked about this one touch football. Okay, that Arsenal will probably play and become very adept and strong at week to week in the Premier League, and they have become very good at it, and it looks like they're going to win, as we speak, the Premier League title. In that final, because it's the final, even the best players are susceptible to this. You could argue that some of those players, maybe the majority, maybe just a few, are dropping down from HPM, high performance mindset, down that scale, very simple, down that scale to APM, even down to LPM, low performance mindset. And that is making a difference to their awareness, their capacity to see the 360. That is making a difference to their anticipation, the speed in which they anticipate. That makes a difference to their decision making, the effectiveness and efficacy of their decision making. It's making a difference to their technical execution, their capacity to execute tactically. And so that's what you're seeing unfold. And it's all underpinned by a drop down by one or two or four or five or seven or 11 players dropping down to APM and LPM. You know, they're not playing as they ordinarily would do. And so I invite the reader in my new book, Compete, and I invite everybody listening in to think of two scales. That mindset scale, 1 to 10, HPM, APM, LPM, and a performance scale from 1 to 10. And there's a relationship between that mindset scale and the performance scale. So again, if we go on that Arsenal case study, we as viewers can hypothesize, you're watching them, you'll say they're a little bit fearful there. They're dropping down to APM and LPM. And so that interacts with the performance scale. And then so suddenly you've got a few Arsenal players who are dropping down to say 4 out of 10 performance or 5 out of 10 or even 6 out of 10 performance. The Manchester City players are up at 7, 8, 9. And so that's, you know, influencing the subsequent outcomes of the game. It's influencing the quality of the execution of actions. That's how in the book I'm defining that performance scale, is the quality by which you're executing your actions. And it's constantly mediated by the mindset scale. So let's break down our equation again. The mindset scale, where I am on that mindset scale, is constantly influencing performance, the quality of my execution of actions. The quality of my execution of my actions, my performance scale, is influencing whether I win the moment or not, all those thousands of moments, which is subsequently impacting the momentum of the game. The teams with the players who are high in a high performance mindset, with a high performance, winning more moments, are managing momentum better. That's how I break this down to answer your question. They're wrestling back, or they're able, because they're winning more moments because of their high performance mindset and a better quality of performance. They're winning more moments and subsequently wrestling back momentum against, or they're retaining momentum for. There will always be times during the game where even the best teams in their HPM will lose a bit of momentum. That's fine, but they're better at managing that and wrestling that back. And that's the crucial thing. And so that's what I'm introducing in the first two chapters. Mindset, moments, momentum. Well, broaden that for me, Dan. Okay. That mindset scale of HPM, APM, LPM, Arsenal dropping down to LPM, Manchester City staying in their HPM. They're winning more moments. They're managing momentum better. They're performing better. And subsequently, they win the game, or they give themselves their best chance to win the game. So then that leaves us with, okay, Dan, well, a mindset scale. What do you mean by this? And you've asked me, Dan, well, what's different to Soccer Tough and Soccer Tough 2? Well, there's lots different, but one of the differences is I'm introducing this mindset scale. I'm talking about HPM, APM, LPM. I'm talking about this with reference to winning more moments and managing momentum. But then I'm breaking down this mindset scale. I'm doing the deep dive here. And I'm making a very bold claim here, Don. And the bold claim I'm making with this mindset scale is I'm saying there are three, and we can come back to Arsenal or coaches listening in. You can think about your own team here as I'm speaking. I'm making a bold claim in Compete, my new book. I'm claiming that there are three mental skills that are constantly influencing or mediating where a player is on their mindset scale, whether they're in HPM, APM, or LPM. And these skills are attention, focus of attention, intensity, as in a mental intensity, and a final skill, intent. Okay. We can go on and break down those three skills. Attention, intensity, intent. These three mental skills are constantly influencing where you are on that mindset scale, which is constantly influencing performance, which is constantly influencing your capacity to win moments, which is constantly influencing your capacity to influence momentum. We're doing the deep dive. Attention. Think about this as a goalkeeping coach. Attention, intensity, intent. I want a high attention. I want an optimal intensity, mental intensity, and I want a high intent. That's where we go next in chapter two.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and we're talking, stay on the Man City Arsenal thing this year. It's something I've thought about a lot this year. There was a time 3, 4 years ago when I think teams were scared to death of Man City. When they looked unstoppable. When Pep, not first took over, but 2 or 3 years in. And they were making that incredible run of championship after championship, and they just felt untouchable. And then there was a shift, and a couple of years ago it was Liverpool, when Klopp had them, and teams looked unstoppable. And I was been lucky enough to coach one or two teams in my life where we knew that we couldn't lose no matter what. I mean, we could go down 2-0. And somehow that team would always come back and at least draw, if not win, and they felt untouchable. And then something shifts. Same players, same coach. I mean, Pep has, if anything, he's kept the quality of the squad high, but they don't feel, I mean, they're still very good. Let's face it, they could still win the Premier League, but there's not this fear of them anymore, right? There's this, and I somehow feel like that affects the Man City players. When you know you're, I don't know how to, I think of the Berserkers, right? Of the Vikings. It's like, how did these guys go in and just slaughter people, even with lesser numbers, right? How did they just take over and just conquer, even with lesser numbers in battles? It was crazy. And I feel like, that's where Man City was at one point, and that's where Liverpool was at one point. But at some point it shifts, and teams aren't, a lesser team maybe gets a draw on them. It's like, how did that happen? Or a lesser team beats them. It's like, wow. And then everybody else says, wait a minute, why are we scared? They're not unbeatable. And then everything begins to shift. Again, it's a different kind of momentum, but it's still the idea of momentum. It's not the momentum in a game, but it's a momentum of a team overall and other teams' perceptions of them. So, as a coach, we want our teams to stay in that high performance mindset, in that high level intensity, in that high level intent of, this is what we're going to accomplish today, and it's going to happen. We're going to make this happen. So, could you give us maybe just one or two, maybe small tips, maybe from your book, to play a teaser that coaches can work with their teams? Because it happens in training, right, Dan? I mean, this isn't a switch you can put on and off. It's match day. Let's be high level intensity today if you haven't worked on it in training. So, how can a coach work on specific skills, some of these specific skills in trainings that can carry over to match day to help their team keep that or get that momentum through a match and then ultimately through a season?
It's such a great question and broad ranging, and I love your description of teams historically being fearful about going to Manchester City. And I've been blessed to be in the mix here. I mean, when I was at AFC Bournemouth, predominantly working in the medical department, and you hear it from players. You hear, even if they're not overtly saying, "Oh, we're going to Manchester City, I don't fancy our chances." I don't think any player would say that anywhere. But you just get the feeling in the building and around the training ground, and that gets to the heart of the point in the book that I'm making is that no matter the level that you're playing at, that having this framework is critical for shared language and shared behaviors. I want my Premier League team to get excited about going to Manchester City because they're excited about going to the Etihad and executing every action, every second in their HPM, their high performance mindset. I want that to be the narrative Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, going into that Saturday game. I want that shared language. I want the players huddling up, talking about high attention, optimal intensity, a high intent, numerous times in training throughout the week. I want this to be coach-led, player-driven, system-supported. And I'm doing this with an NWSL team at the moment, coach-led, player-driven, system-supported, where we are speaking the language of HPM high-performance mindset, where every player has their own individual framework that leans towards high attention, optimal intensity, and a high intent that helps them compete in their HPM, that helps them avoid competing in their LPM. You immerse players there, you create the language there. Every single day in training, every activity, every session, keep ball rondo, small sided game, every goalkeeping activity that you do, you reinforce that every day. So what you're doing here, Don, to accommodate the challenge that you're speaking about is your reverse engineering. It's not, we're going to Manchester City. We're not going to Manchester City. We're going to win. We're going to win. We're going to win. It's we're going there and we're going to be in HPM. That means high attention, optimal intensity, high intent. That's going to help us have our best possible performance. That's going to make us tough to beat. And that's going to give us our best chance to win moments, to manage momentum, to have our best possible outcome here. But the reverse engineering is the whole narrative is detailed because you lose on the detail. Is detailed around attention, intensity, intent every day, HPM, every player, all in working on this coach-led, player-driven, system-supported. That's how we're going to do it. Now, that doesn't mean we're definitely going to go and beat Manchester City, but it gives us our best chance. Now, if I may, I'll borrow from my own playbook here at the very highest level. My work with Blessed to work with Arne Slot, and I know it's been a challenging season for him at Liverpool. I don't have anything to do with that, but I was blessed to work with him for 2 seasons at Feyenoord. And I'm going to give you a description of when this went really right and when it went really wrong. 2022-23 season, where we did win the Eredivisie title, we went to Ajax and we hadn't beaten them away from home for 17 years. All Feyenoord fans are banned in that stadium, 70,000 Ajax supporters. The whole feeling around the place became we've got to compete in HPM, high performance mindset. We went in at halftime 2-1 down. I know from feedback that Arne was emphasizing HPM. We came out, put pressure on them, and we eventually won the game 3-2. You win for lots of reasons. I'm not saying it's only HPM, but we competed in HPM. We beat them away from home for the first time 3-2. That was an example of it working. That same season, we played in the Europa League quarterfinals against Roma. HPM first leg. At the De Kuip Stadium in Rotterdam, we went to Rome again. Feyenoord fans banned from the Rome Stadium, but we started well. HPM, it went 1-1. We scored in the 79th minute. All we had to do was hold out, just hold on, hold on, hold on for 15 minutes. I deliberately got feedback from all the players afterwards because I wanted to get subjective opinions of the feeling of the players on the pitch. As a broad brush statement, to a man, they all agreed they dropped back to their LPM. They were distracted. They dropped in intensity, or in fact, they raised too much in intensity. They got anxious and they dropped in intent. Again, we can break down what those mean. They dropped in intent. They dropped down to their LPM. We ended up losing the game 4-1 in extra time. The point being is teams have to stay on this all the time. So My first response to your question is have the framework in place. You don't have to use the Dan Abrahams, you don't have to use the compete framework. But for me, my argument is where's the framework? Where's the mental framework? Where's our competitive mental framework that we're going to be all in on, come back to every single day, that we're going to create the narrative around going into the game against Manchester City or going into the game against our local rivals? Are we coach led on this, player driven on this, and system supported on this? And then we can talk about the mini tools and techniques, my tools and techniques, game phase, squashing ants, controllers, match script, etc. But that's what you need every single day, in my opinion.
Yeah, Dan, I love this. And by the way, for those listening, if specifically some of the techniques that you just mentioned are laid out in more detail in Soccer Tough and Soccer Tough 2. Squashing ants, I always love. It's just such a simple automatic negative thoughts, by the way, for those listening that wonder what we're talking about by we're talking about squashing ants. Which we all have, not just in sports, but in life. It's just part of our survival mechanism, I think.
I had
Always
loads of
of.
ants. I had loads of ants writing this book, Don, I can assure you. So,
Okay.
to try and get it done. Sorry to
I bet you
interject.
did. And
Yes.
people need to understand it's not a bad thing. It is just the way that we are, we evolved, looking for saber-toothed tigers around every corner. If we weren't on high alert all the time, imagining that, what's that snake and what is that? What is that stick? Is that a poisonous snake or is that a stick? And if you don't think of the automatically negative side of it, it could be live or die consequences. If you misjudged that, oh, you were positive all the time. Oh, it's just a stick. Don't worry about it. And it turned out to be a poisonous snake. You died. And so that we evolved this way. To always think of negative thoughts, but the fact is there's no saber-toothed tigers around the corner anymore, and sports we aren't going to be, at least in the modern countries, we're not going to be executed if we don't win. That's
Well,
I don't know
politically
any
put there,
countries
Don.
do that, but you know what I'm saying? There's no
Yes.
dire consequences really towards winning or losing. It's all imagined. And so being able to stay away from those, not stay away, but recognize the negative thoughts when they arise. Just recognize them and acknowledge them. Oh, that's a negative thought. That's not helpful to me. I'm gonna squash it. And what I've done, I've interviewed, I won't say loads, but quite a few top level professionals, guys that have played in World Cups and national teams and Premier League and without exception, they come to the conclusion that at that level, everybody can play the game. Everybody can kick a ball with high and receive and pass with high levels of skill and head the ball, and everybody has a high level of tactical understanding at that point. Or you don't make it to that level if you don't have that. And everybody can run fast. Everybody can jump high. Everybody is strong. The separator is this mental, this ability to stay in that, in the zone, let's call it, because everybody knows what the zone is. That's the high performance mindset that we're talking about. But every player and every coach has had moments where, like, we're unstoppable, or that player can't lose a 50-50. It's incredible. Look at them today. If every single ball they're winning, every single ball inside the box, that they can't lose a header today. It's incredible how players get into these zones. And every pro that I've ever talked to, Dan, talks about the zone. And how the ball just looked slow. The game felt slow. It looked easy. It felt easy for me that day. And I don't know how I got there. Everything felt like it was slowed down in slow motion, and the game just felt easy to me. But talk a little bit about that, Dan, if you would please. What what that means to players when they get into the zone and how that happens.
I'm going to answer this in a specific way because I think this is really, really interesting. I mean, I chose not to describe the zone in the book, and but if I was pushed, I would say on your mindset scale, 9 out of 10 and 10 out of 10 is flow or the zone, and that is an effortless state that one can find where. As you've mentioned, there are fewer thoughts. Everything feels, the game goes on around you slow. It feels like you've got more time. You probably feel lighter on your feet. Maybe the ball appears
You don't hear
bigger.
the crowd even. I mean, it's like
Yeah.
it
Yeah.
is this narrowing in. It's like, wow, I didn't hear what anybody had to say. I was just out of my mind with how I was playing. It felt like it was in a dream, like in another world. I mean, for those, like I say, I hope every player has had the, experience once in their life, Dan, to be able to feel what that feels like to be in that. And then it's like, oh, I want to repeat that. That's how I want to play all the time.
And the interesting dynamic, I want to repeat that, is quite often the more you try to force that, the less you've got, less chance you've got of actually repeating it. And interestingly, I mean, just stepping away slightly, although this is kind of encapsulated in the book, at probably the HPM at 7 or 8 out of 10, which is what the research literature shows in sports psychology, Don, is that as much as athletes will perform at their best or very well in that zone or flow state. Actually, what we also know from self-reports measurements is that an effortful state is also very prominent. That some on some days, and this is what I tend to find in my work, is getting players to understand, yes, we want to strive for that effortless state, but you also have to understand that the way you're designed as a human being, as human beings, we're very complex. We've got 305 bones in our body. We've got a whole bunch of hormones floating around our bloodstream. It's very unlikely that you're going to find that flow or zone state that much. So actually, slightly below that is an effortful. Effortless, effortful, effortless, effortful state where you've got to work a bit harder during the game mentally to be able to have the best possible performance. Again, think about your two scales, mindset scale, performance scale. What I found in my work, when I get players to put that mindset scale first, my job is to be in my HPM. My job is to be as high in that mindset scale as possible. It's not so much about I'm not going to put any effort into it. It's I'm going to know exactly what I've got to do in every activity, in every session, in every single day, and then on game day to give myself my best chance to be as high as possible on that scale. Some days I have to accept that I've got to work hard mentally. And that's not about overthinking or thinking more. It's about pinpointing where you're going to place your attention. It's about pinpointing how you're going to engage with an optimal level of intensity and be alert and ready, alert and ready. It's about knowing what you've got to do to execute with a high intent. So my clients and people who are engaged in the kind of stuff in my book, and this is where we come back to the techniques, know that, okay, my job is this mindset scale. I'm going to go out and compete as high as I can on this mindset scale. I accept that on some days that's going to be challenging. On some days I've got to use my self-talk controller. I've got to talk to myself a lot. Some days I've got to really put to the forefront of my mind my game face, my competitive persona. I teach players how to have a game face. Some days I've got to work very, very hard on to squash my ants, my automatic negative thoughts, as you've mentioned already. Some days I've got to check in with my match script. Some days I've got to really get be focused and connected to the game. So I've got to get out of my head into the game. So I've got to be scanning and searching, scanning and searching. And that's a technique I call a focus flashlight in this new book, Compete. So what I'm saying in this book is that what I'm setting up is helping players to have this framework. But what I want them to understand is some days this framework just, you use the framework and everything just comes to you and you slot into your HPM. Those are the flow or the zone days. On plenty of days throughout your season, you've got to work harder. You've got to talk to yourself more. You've got to get into your game face. You've got to use those action-based words. I'm going to be alert, alive, relentless, dominant, sharp. I've got to talk to myself about, I've got to embody that, use my body language, my body controller. I've got to check in with my match script. On some days, you've got to be really purposeful and intentional with your mindset techniques in order to find your high-performance mindset. That's the secret sauce here. That's the secret sauce. It's understanding there's not one state to play in, which is your effortless state. There's also an effortful state. On some days, you've got to wake up and you've got to work quite hard. And that's okay. That's not overthinking. That's just pinpointing your HPM. It's using that framework, and it's being outstanding to use that framework.
Dan, one of the other areas I want to touch on before I let you go is the reality of college soccer landscape for a coach and a team. The reality is that probably 80%, if I'm going to put a percentage on it, maybe it's 90%, but the vast majority of coaches are a full-time or even a part-time coach. The head coach, it might even be part-time, and they've got almost no staff. At best, they've got, yes, there's a few elite programs in the country that have a three or full-time four full-time staff and a sports psychologist on staff and a trainer that just works with the team. But the majority of college coaches out there are feeling very much alone in this, right? So they've got to manage 20, 30, 40 players or more with themselves and maybe a part-time assistant if they're lucky too. And nobody's getting paid really all that much, honestly. I think of many of the teams that I've coached. I'm getting paid, maybe 60,000 a year to manage 40 players, and I've got an assistant who makes 15,000 a year. And I've got to order the uniforms, and I've got to make sure that they're, checking in with the trainer every day. And I've got to make sure that I'm working with the trainer to help the players recover. It's like, when do I have time to work on the mental skills? I want to. I know how important it is, but I've got to plan sessions, and I've got to deal with my athletic director, and I've got to, arrange for equipment, and I've got to arrange for the, I got to call the hotels, and I'm doing everything, and my assistant's helping some, but what do I expect from a poor guy making 15, 20,000 a year? Can't even feed a family on that. I can't expect him to do everything for me. How do I fit, like practically, how do I tackle this mental piece also?
Great question, Don. And the answer is simple. And then we can expand. You are always coaching mindset. You are always coaching mindset. So you are coaching mindset in your activities. Every activity counts again. Rondo, keep ball, small sided game, 11v11, every activity. As a goalkeeper coach, you were helping your goalkeepers practice mindset when you were getting to work with on their handling, their footwork, their distribution, their catching from crosses. It's in every second. It's in every action. And again, let's come back to attention, intensity, intent. And if I come back to you, Don, as a goalkeeping coach, you were directing attention with your instructions. You were driving intensity through your voice and your session design, and you were drilling intent by your insistence of, show me sharp, show me alert, come on, be dominant, be alive here with your voice. You were driving intention. You are always directing it as a coach. You are always directing attention. You are always, driving intensity, mental intensity, and drilling intent. But you've got to see it that way. You've got to see it through that lens. It's not going to happen by just, I mean, it's happening anyway, but if you can see that as, hey, look, And this is where I say, okay, look, coaches aren't psychologists per se, but they're in a wonderful position to cultivate psychology through their session design, through their coach behaviors, through the messages that they give. So you're doing it every second that you're out on the grass, and you've got to see it that way. And that's the beauty of having a framework like the HPM, the mindset scale, because players, we're going to work on HPM here. I want you to show me your game faces. I want us to squash ants together if we were to do a slight deeper dive there. I've got, that I've worked closely with college programs. I've probably worked with about 50 college programs the last 6 or 7 years. And it's been the same message to them, is that you are always working on mindset. Now, let's add to that, because I fully appreciate and respect what you're saying. There's not always a lot of resources in these programs, and I guess that's where soccer coaches will go, oh, I wish I was into basketball and we had more resources than basketball coaches have, right? Probably more, the bigger paychecks. But joking aside, that's where you have to see the most powerful psychologists as the players. And again, look, they're not psychologists per se, before a psychologist shouts at me, which they tend to do whenever I say that. I'm not suggesting players are psychologists per se, but they are in the best position to influence their psychology and their teammate psychology. So when you've got players out there reinforcing, what do we do here? We squash ants. What do we do here? We execute in our game face. What do we do here? We compete in HPM. That if people went online and looked at the NWSL team on their online socials, and they saw in the huddle the captain talking about attention, intensity, intent in HPM, because that's what we've set in place there. That's what we set in place at some of the leading college programs that I worked with last fall. Okay. Absolutely critical. You're players, you're a powerful psychologist. You do psychology in your role. Embedded into your program by having these frameworks. You can call it what you don't have to use my language. You don't have to use my book. You can use whatever resources you have, but understand it's happening on the grass. And then say to your players, you are the most powerful psychologists here. I want to hear your voice. I want to hear you helping each other squash ants. I want to hear you helping each other be in game face. I want to hear you helping each other be in HPM. I want to see you insist on each other being in high performance mindset. Then that's very powerful. And every program can do that, because it's no extra time and no extra resources. It just takes a little bit of time each week to learn, to decide what framework you want, and keep it as simple as possible if you want. If it's to, I say to college programs I work with who purchase my platform, I say, look, just two or three things. If it's squashing ants, game face, and controllers that you want to use, do so. Whatever works for you. Two or three things, that brings you out ahead of other programs. So you're always coaching psychology. Do so deliberately, intentionally, and on purpose.
I love it. And I guess the other thing, for the players listening to this, as a coach, I would say you recognize that we don't have all of the resources that a Premier League club has, which means as a player, you need to own some of this too, so that we do have that shared language and that I used to call it team talk, but shared language. And if the players understand how to squash ants and understand what high performance mindset is, then the players can help, like you said, enforce this, and it's not just on the coaches. So then, coaches, if you've read a good book or studied what Dan's programs are, or read one of Dan's books, and the players have done the same, coaches out there, this is a great summer project for your players. And Dan, I was looking online just before we started. The Kindle versions of your books are ridiculously inexpensive, like under $10. It's like, that's crazy cheap investment for a player for themselves. And I certainly, if I was coaching a team, this would be a summer project. It's like, okay, everybody, grab the compete book. I want you to, it's under $10 on the Kindle version. Our staff is going to read it, and then we're going to come back in our preseason, and we're going to, or we'll have Zoom calls with each other as we come into preseason, and we're all going to be on the same page with the language, so that we have a shared language, so that when we step on the field, we're all helping each other. It's not just waiting for the coach to do this.
I think it's so important, and I just come back to, coach-led, player-driven, system-supported. It's exactly what you've said. It's got to be, and that takes some coaching skill, and some effort. But it's player-driven, player-driven, and that's you can it can still be coach-led. Coaches are leading on the language here; they're leading on the expertise. But you're passing that over to players to drive it. And that's where, we don't have time necessarily today to talk more about it, but that's where, investing in more of an autonomy supportive coaching style where your sessions, there are plenty of huddles in sessions. You're giving players opportunities to talk. You're driving conversations during water breaks, where these zones of time where players can converse and reinforce these little things, pre-session at the beginning of a session, just 1 minute of talking about this stuff, and just at the end of the session, just a couple of minutes then, in team meetings, just making sure that you're emphasizing at, for example, HPM and the mindset scale during your team meetings as you're talking technically, tactically, physically. All these times are wonderful times for it to be coach-led, player-driven. When I talk about system supported, is in those programs that do have a slightly broader network of specialities around the players. Your sports scientists, your strength and conditioning, and there's good programs that have that, and they're fortunate to have that. But it's those members of staff also supporting the language and the story, the narrative, the behaviours. That these frameworks. That's critical, Dom.
Dan, one more thing I wanted you to discuss a little bit. I've always teased you that you are truly awful at promoting yourself and your programs. And I tease you about that, and we tease each other about that. But I'm not sure. I mean, I see things changing with players, with a generation that doesn't like to read books maybe as much. And you've got an incredible program that is really, honestly, it's cost efficient. At Sports Recruiting USA, every one of our players gets access to your soccer academy. But I want you to explain real quickly. I know you've done it before, but for those of you that are listening to this for the first time, listen to what Dan has to say about the Dan Abraham Soccer Academy, because it's not a replacement for the books, but it's a reinforcement on what he teaches in his books. And it's if a player doesn't like to read or doesn't want to read, it's a way for a player to get a sports psychologist on their side. And parents too, by the way, will get access to this, and a coach. It's an incredible program. Talk about the Dan Abraham Soccer Academy, please.
Don, thank you so much, and I'm honoured and delighted to partner with yourself at SIUSA with this program, and we've done that for years. And as you say, your commitment at SIUSA is second to none in terms of providing the education that players need, and a tiny part of that education is the kind of mental skills and techniques that we've been speaking to. So my academy program actually has, as I mentioned earlier, has supported up around about, I think it's 50 Division 1 to Division 3 and some junior colleges over the last 8 or 9 years. It's simply packed, filled with videos, bite-sized videos that break down these techniques, things like game phrase, squashing ants, match script, controllers, being an HPM, and a whole host more. It's accessible for players. They can watch the videos in their own time. They're simple animated videos that they can watch. As I said, they're bite-sized, 2 or 3 minutes here and there, and it really just helps players to create that framework that we're talking about. And as you said, not everybody loves to read or has the time to read, and so watching those bite-sized videos can be very powerful. And for those college coaches listening in, there's a coach program as well that offers them more meat on the bone when it comes to the techniques. It teaches them how to teach these techniques. And any colleges that actually sign up now have their own private WhatsApp group with me, where players and the coaches themselves can sign up as a group, and they get a couple of WhatsApp messages from me each week if they take the team organization plan, so they get plenty of support. So yeah, my passion really, Don, is to just demystify this area and provide as many platforms as possible for players to grab hold of, because I really think there's so many players who don't enjoy competing and learning the game as much as they should do, especially as the game becomes more serious for them. I think that there's not enough education out there for coaches that's applicable, practical, and accessible, that enables coaches to incorporate these mental skills and mental techniques into their program. I think this is the challenge with psychology, Don, is and we've spoken to this many times on your podcast. Psychology is broad, it's deep, it's difficult to make sense of and to sense give around a lot of the time. And so anything, whether it's a book or an online program like I have, I just think that these things can be so useful for coaches to invest in, because they're investing in their coaching, and they're also investing in players enjoying the game a lot more as it becomes more serious. So I really appreciate the shout out from you, and I promise you I will get better at marketing my wares.
And then you've got your own podcast, don't you?
Yeah, I'm a distinctly average host, but I have amazing guests. I have some of the world's leading experts, excuse me, in this area, some of the top professors and doctors of sports psychology and skill acquisition and coaching science, because I'm a sports psychologist who's passionate about skill acquisition and coaching science as well. So it's called the Sports Psych Show, and we do deep dives. So, I mean, really, where the Sports Psych Show has gone with 340 episodes now is increasingly into the academic side, but demystifying the academic side. There's so many wonderful academic papers out there, Don, that really don't see the light of day. If you think I'm not so good at marketing my wares, they're hopeless at academia at marketing their wares, just in terms of great information that coaches would do so well to pay attention to. But they don't always have the time, they're busy. And these academic papers, sometimes, Don, I don't profess to be the smartest cookie in the jar, but I'm not daft. I've written 5 books, but it takes me 5 or 6 reads of a paper sometimes to actually understand what on earth they're talking about. So that's the idea here, is to with the author, the researcher, to break down these research papers. I also talk to sports psychology consultants and stuff. So it's a really cool, fun podcast that does do the deep dive. We do go deep some of the time, but it's fun to do, because not everything can be easy and simple all the time. Sometimes complication and complexity has to be embraced, and we've really got to think about this stuff, especially in the complex world of coaching. So that's what the Sport Psych Show is all about.
Good. Yeah, well, it's certainly on my saved podcasts, and it's well worth listening to if anybody's that interested in digging deeper into the world of sports psychology. Will you be, or do you know yet, are you going to Kansas City this year? Will you be presenting this year?
I I believe so. Yeah, I mean, we're a bit off at the
Okay.
moment, aren't we? But yeah, I was there back in January, the beginning of this year, for the convention, and I think I've had the thumbs up from the organisers. So we're early days, but it was great fun. In where were we? We were in Philadelphia.
Philadelphia?
Yeah,
Yeah.
that was great. I mean, they've had a bit of a reinvention there, and they're pushing on through after some tough times. And I always am honoured and delighted to come over to convention to see good friends, yourself, Don, and everybody at SI USA. And it's honestly, I know that sometimes the convention doesn't hit everybody's taste, but over in Europe we are thoroughly envious because we don't have anything like it. And I know it's a commercial marketplace, but boy, it's so cool to see so many good like-minded people in the one place for that specific time. So I'm hoping to be there. I'm hoping we can hook up for a coffee or a beer.
Yeah, so that's United Soccer Coaches for those of you wondering what we're
Yes,
talking
yes.
about. And they move around every year, but Dan is always one of the standing room only, quite often, speakers, coaches. He's got a quite a cult following amongst the college soccer coaches. And it's so if you ever get the opportunity to listen to Dan in person, he's a dynamic presenter. As he said, he tries to he does a great job, you do, Dan, at demystifying sports psychology, making it accessible to the players. So again, we've got Soccer Tough 2, Soccer Brain for the coaches, and now your new book, Compete. And we're always thrilled to have you on, Dan. Really appreciate it. And I look forward to doing this again with you.
Appreciate you, Don, and always honored and delighted to be involved with your corporation, SI USA. It's wonderful, and you guys do some amazing work in the college space. So I'm honored to be involved with you guys. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Dan. Talk to you soon.